Technorama episode 609, Argon, you're out of your element. Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, where it is hotter than the surface of the sun. Because it's late July, early August. It's August.
Come
now.
On. It's off. It's not that hot. Maybe a degree less.
Well, no, actually, the
energy
corona,
has to travel all that distance.
The corona is hotter than the surface. So we like astronomy around here, and we'll be covering a little bit of astronomy. That person you see just over there. Right as I point down, I clicked away. That was good. It's the one and only man who makes this show run, Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
It's doing good. It's a team effort.
It is. Come on. We don't have any hand signals or anything to like cut to camera one. We need a director. Oh,
we have hand signals. I just don't show them on the webcam.
They wouldn't be family friendly. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Try to keep it G-rated. Maybe PJ.
More
PG,
than one finger at a time.
Yeah. One, two. Okay, that's almost up.
Right. All right, let's get into our feedback. We've got some listener feedback for you this week. So play that awesome feedback music.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day.
Oh, boy.
Mailman, mailman, mail today. Reach right in and pull one out. Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy.
Oh, after all these years, that song still warms my heart.
Doesn't it?
All right, we have a listener from David, I'm going to try this, Klemkin from Shakopee, yeah. Minnesota. He writes us and says, hello, and let me say I'm a longtime podcast listener and enjoy your show. I'm seeking your help. All right, Well, we'll do the best we can. Right.
There's your first problem.
You'll hear Clinton chastise us later when we play his ID. It's about a NAS / Plex. So I bought a NAS earlier this year. Okay. Sure. You've talked about having a Synology NAS. I don't have a Synology NAS, but I think someone in our listenership does. But anyway, he says, you talked about having a Synology NAS and about running Plex. Between your podcast and several friends that I've talked to about Synology NAS and Plex, I've been thinking about this. Is something I could use for both backing up both of my Macs and Android phones and backing up my Dropbox and Flickr photos. And it would be nice to put my DVD / Blu-ray / 4K. That's a lot of slashes. Mm-hmm. I briefly read that some of the entry-level units might have a harder time with some of the 4K and some transcoding, as it sounds like there are some that have some expandability. I'm looking at a 2/4/5 bay drives, might only be able to fill one or two bays right away. This would be my first time with the NAS and RAID, etc. Any suggestions, recommendations would be appreciated. I've heard a few people talk about Plex being able to do the DVR thing where there is support for having been a new HD run 6 Turner DVR. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I understood what that meant, but we'll go on like I did. That was support to have come out the first half of the year, but I think with the pandemic, things have been put on hold since. I haven't heard or seen anything since before the first of the year. On to networking. Wow. Okay. We'll do one thing at a time. He's got like three topics in here. So NAS / Plex. I know I have a Plex app on mine. I have not used it for that. I have not moved a whole bunch of data over there. That's a great idea because I have a lot of DVDs that really should be digitized and put somewhere, mm-hmm. and that would be the ideal place for them. I have the Western Digital Ultra X something 2, I forgot. EX2 Ultra. Wow, she walked right over to it and told me. That's a heck of a video engineer I married.
That's right.
And it's got 2 4-gig drives in it. And my main mission was to start backing up using Time Machine with my various Macintoshes around here. I have not looked into using it for the phone. Great idea. I should do that. Especially
that's a
good,
that's a good idea.
Yeah, my phone is now 2.5 years old. And it's probably time. It's also getting quite full on both the internal and the SD card memory. So it's looking at that. Any thoughts or comments on the whole transcoding 4K thing, Craig?
Well, I don't know about that so much. I guess it depends on the the hardware you're putting it on or what's serving it up. So if you have the transcoding on there, it's got to be able to decode it and deliver it across your network. I really don't have much experience on that but this is something that I'm looking to do because I've got a little wall of DVDs over there. There's some movies I would rather just encode rather than rebuy, streaming. So, so I don't know. I'm gonna have to look into that myself. Now, as far as Plex being a DVR, I do know it has support. I saw an article from 2017. I'm sure there's a newer one. It talks about using, I think it was a HD Home Run Connect, and it's basically an antenna kind of base device you put on your local network, and you can, record streams off of it. So
that's cool.
And it has support for that. It'll detect all the channels and allow you to set up whatever you want. So I know it has support for it. I don't know how complex that support is, but yeah, it's there. Also, Amazon's got one of their Fire boxes. It's like one of those little square. It's like a set top box.
Yeah.
And you can hook up an antenna that and just put it on the network, and then you can stream it to, your Fire TV or any of the little Fire devices.
Mm-hmm.
They support that. So I don't know. That might be an option as well, but I think Plex would be nice.
Yeah, a lot of these units have built-in apps. Like Craig and I were looking at this. I can SSH into mine, and I don't know what variant of any operating system it is. If it's specialized, it's got a Unix command set, limited Unix command set, I should say. We'll talk about the trials and tribulations I've had with Crontab before, but leave that alone for now. But there are apps you can add on to it from the web interface, and I'm pretty certain Plex is one of them. I've got my cousin-in-law something once removed something. He took an old Macintosh and put a Plex app on it, and he uses that as his Plex server, and he loves it. I mean, he just walks up to his TV and goes, "Hey, you want to watch a movie?" And it's running. Yeah.
I did play around with it on an old Windows box. It was a Windows laptop, and I tried it a while back. I just threw some stuff on it, and it worked. Yeah, it worked great. So
I think I also have a 2 terabyte external network-based drive, like a Wi-Fi drive. Similar to the NAS, only it's a standalone. It's not mirrored or anything, but that might also work. But I now have toys that I have no idea what they do.
You got so much stuff. You're like, I think I've got one of those.
Keep digging. We'll find something that connects to this. All right. As far as connection, he writes all about networking. Right now, we have a Comcast modem / router in the living room, and the main office / computer room is down the hall for the desktop. Would it be worth upgrading from the Wi-Fi to 1 gig, 2.5 gig, 10 gig? Your Wi-Fi itself, I'm trying to remember what the Google Wi-Fi we've got is. That's 54, right? No, it's 50. You've got Google.
I'm trying to remember what it is also, but
it's not.
I don't have any trouble with my transfer speeds on my Google Wi-Fi.
No, generally what I do to keep the latency low and the bandwidth speeds up is hardwire what you need to hardwire, and the rest is Wi-Fi. Like the TV is Wi-Fi. My laptop is Wi-Fi, but the stuff in the studio that I need to connect and maintain those speeds for streaming are hardwired, and that gets you up to a gig. I mean, I pay for gig down, but it's like 35 meg up to the cable provider, but internally to the house, the fastest I can go is gig. It's 1000 base T. So
yeah. So the Google Wi-Fi is capable of doing 1.2 gigabytes.
How could it do that if the cable isn't that fast?
Internally, inside your house.
Okay.
I'm not talking about your...
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another issue, dealing with Comcast. But I haven't had any trouble with speeds in the house. It's been pretty reliable. And I'm not doing it now, but I was doing it for a long time. I just jumped an Ethernet cable over to my desktop computer off of one of the satellite points. I got a 3-point Google Wi-Fi, just like I think you do too. Yep. And I just jumped off of the Ethernet on one of them, and it was pretty rock solid. I had no troubles, unless the power went out. And then there's then there's that. And
then you always have problems. He also has a topic here titled DVR. One of the other things I'm hoping to do is replace my current old Comcast DVRs, two of them that we've had for 10 plus years. I've been thinking of getting a TiVo Edge to replace the two DVRs. Is it worth getting an expanded one from weakness to get a larger hard drive than the basic one? The secondary question, does TiVo record in the open, even the cable version? Most watch shows delayed. I work third shift. I haven't owned a TiVo in ages. It was like the second generation ones. So can't really help you out on the DVR thing, since Craig and I both cut the cords a while ago.
The TiVo Bolt was the last one I have. I still got it. If you're interested, I'll sell it to you. but it worked pretty well. It did what I wanted. I hooked up an antenna to it and was able to record just one station at a time. But now you can, the Edge does six, which is amazing. On top of that, I guess if you got a cable card and you're recording from that, that's, I have no idea, but I think that, I like the TiVos. The only problem I had was paying for the channel guide.
Yeah.
But if you're using the Plex and you've got the TV tuner and it all set up,
then you're all set.
I don't think you really need the Bolt. So I'm not sure. And I would think that Plex is going to record more in the open. If I understand what I think you're meaning, that you're just going to end up with MP4s or something free of DRM. I don't think you're not going to get that from the TiVo. You're going to get that from Plex more than likely.
There are a lot of enthusiast sites like this out there around Plex and DVRs. I encourage you to look at them. I apologize that we're not more of a resource on that, but I appreciate the email either way. Uh-oh, did the video stream crash? The video stream crashed. Live feed interrupted. Okay, it says it's back. So sorry about that. Okay. We seem to be having some jitters on the... it's interrupted here.
I think your Google Wi-Fi is going less than 1.2 gigabytes.
Okay. could be Cox again. I don't know. We'll see. All right. So apologies for the live stream issues. We will see if we can get those going better. All right. Going to keep an eye on it. Donna's just going to point at my laptop if something else dies. Let's do a real quick review of our question of the week. 2 weeks ago, we didn't have a show last week. What movie plot hole ruined the entire experience for you?
There's a good many answers too.
It is jumping up and down on the, okay, we hope. And I look at the Technorama page. We have two shares, but no comments on that one.
Oh. I thought we had comments on it.
Not on that one. I have one on my page. I know at least one. Mike Will says, Home Alone. Kevin should have just called the cops. Absolutely right. That would have solved the whole thing. To which Brian replies, Mike, the phone lines were down. Also, if a Quora commander who claims to have read the novelization, Kevin thought that Joe Pesci's character was a dirty cop since he showed up at the house in a cop uniform. Oh, yeah. Okay. So Mike concedes. Steve from Sweden says the latest Robin Hood 2018 movie. It was a crappy movie from the beginning, but the plot, or rather lack of a plot, ruined an otherwise crappy movie and made it all totally bogus.
Crap. Yeah.
Chad, one of my old coworkers, says clicking on the pie symbol on the bottom of the web page.
Oh yeah, what movie was that? It had the, I remember it has had the pie symbol on it, and you click on it, and it gave you something. It gave you like it was a big spoiler or something like that.
Sounds like a Black
Chad,
Mirror.
You failed.
Episode.
You got to give us some more details, there, buddy.
Oh, sounds like a Black Mirror episode. Okay.
Yeah. I got a few answers. One from Joe Frory, our buddy, Mr. The mega podcasting guy. The fact that John Connor was not erased from existence at the end of Terminator 2 That was proof positive to me that they had failed, yet James Cameron kept acting like they had won. They had not. They had won, or had they won, John Connor would have been erased from existence. The one of the reasons Terminator 3 is a superior film, well, is because it fixes the plot hole in part 2.
Okay. Yeah, Joe gives some good insightful answers to that kind
sure.
of stuff.
Sure. Oh, no. No, I'm not knocking him. And my buddy CJ Lamb, he says, any movie that uses time travel as a plot device, this is a writer's crutch. It also creates more questions than answers. Me being me, I fixated on the additional questions and my suspension of belief stopped suspending, except Planet of the Apes. They go around in time and that's allowed in physics.
Okay.
And Brian Parker, our buddy from DragonCon, not a plot hole per se, but the flying car at the end of Grease.
No.
If I need to win a girl back, I tell her I've got a flying car. If I race against the rival gang, I use the flying car. Basically, the whole movie would be about me and my flying car. There you go. That's pretty good.
Thank you very much, everybody. We will get you another question next week. At the end of this show and ready for next week, we'll read out the answers. Yeah. Stick with us. There's more coming to this show. Let's do the history thing. And I believe that's the birthday music. Nope, that's the history. Good thing I color-coded these things.
You sure about that?
On this day in history for August 5th, 2020, this is the 218th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 148 days remaining in 2020. It was on this date in 1583 that Sir Humphrey Gilbert establishes the first English colony in North America in what is now St. John's, Newfoundland, and Labrador.
That same date in 1620, the Mayflower departs from Southampton, England, carrying would-be settlers on its first attempt to reach North America. It is forced to dock in Dartmouth when its companion ship, the Speedwell, springs a leak.
Oh, really? Didn't know about that. Yeah. Didn't the,
Wait, turn around.
Didn't the Titanic also leave from Southampton?
Yeah.
204 years ago today, the British Admiralty dismisses Francis Ronald's new invention of the first working electric telegraph as, quote, wholly unnecessary, preferring to continue using the semaphore, you know, where you wave the flags in different directions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, way to
and
go there.
200 years later, we were texting each other
with semaphore.
On August 5th, 1858, Cyrus Westfield and others completed the first transatlantic telegraph cable after several unsuccessful attempts. It will operate for less than a month. That's a lot of effort for...
This is the seventh time it better work. All right, it worked! Sounds a bit like the podcast and this podcast and bandwidth.
Yeah.
136 years ago today, the cornerstone of the Statue of Liberty is laid on Bedloe's Island, which is now Liberty Island, in New York Harbor.
On August 5th, 1888, Bertha Benz drove from Mannheim to Porfersheim.
We'll work with that.
Forsheim, there you go. And back for the first long-distance automobile trip, commemorated as the Bertha Benz Memorial Route since 2008.
Okay. August 5th, 1914 in Cleveland, Ohio, the first electric traffic light was installed. I think that's in Trivial Pursuit.
You're sitting there blinking.
Remember, August 5th, 1914, Cleveland, Ohio. The answer is electric traffic light.
Okay. I remember that. It was on this date in 1926 that Harry Houdini performed his greatest feat, spending 91 minutes underwater in a sealed tank before escaping.
Ooh, that's a long time.
He was from where you were at.
And what was the audience doing the whole time?
Waiting.
We've been here for an hour. We're getting our money's worth.
They were also holding their breath.
Well, it's lasting longer than a Tyson fight. Okay, it was 63 years ago today that American Bandstand, a show dedicated to the teenage, quote, baby boomers, by playing the songs and showcasing popular dances of the time. It debuted on this day on the ABC television network.
And 58 years ago today, Nelson Mandela was jailed, and he would not be released until 1990.
Okay, so he went to jail 5 years after American Bandstand. So he came out not knowing what the latest dance craze was. Hmm. That same date in 1973, Mars 6 was launched from the USSR. Happy birthday goes out on this date, too. If you have your birthday today, August 5th, you share the birthday with the likes of Norwegian mathematician and theorist Niels Henrik Abel, born on this date in 1802.
And Joseph Merrick, an English man with severe deformities, was born on the same date in 1862.
He was a.k.a. the Elephant Man.
That's right.
Karl Harries, the German chemist and academic, was born 150 years ago today.
And born August 5th, 1872, Brazilian physician, bacteriologist and epidemiologist, founded the Oswald Cruz Foundation. His name was Oswald Cruz.
Oswaldo Cruz.
Excuse me, Oswaldo. I missed the O.
American actor, director, and screenwriter John Huston was born 114 years ago today.
And American pilot, engineer, and astronaut Neil Armstrong was born on this date in 1930.
That Neil Armstrong?
That Neil Armstrong.
Also turning 86 today is Swedish engineer and theorist Carl Johan Ostrom.
Wow. Hey, is that a...
There's an A with a dot there. Above it and an O with the two dots above it. And we're really trying to work with it.
Try and wipe it off on my monitor. It didn't look right. Brian G. Marsden, English-American astronomer academic, was born on the same date in 1937.
American actress Lonnie Anderson is 75 today.
Wow. African-American physicist Shirley Ann Jackson was born on this date in 1946.
Also born on the same date in 1947, American astrophysicist and academic France A. Cordoba. Oh, we got some listener birthdays here. Let's see if we can get them in. No, I'm not going to get them in. Yeah, we can.
Hurry.
August 5th, between 5th and 11th, August 6th is our daughter Julie, Philippa Ballantyne on the 8th, Matt Coe on the 9th, Julia Pose also on the 9th. On the 10th is Sam Martin, Steve Wozniak. Yes, that's Steve Wozniak on the 11th. And David Brewer on the 11th of August as well. Happy birthday to all of you if it's your birthday this week. Happy birthday to you. Get your name on the birthday calendar at the link below. TalkChat.com/wiki. That's the way it was on this day in history for August 5th, 2020.
Like a shoehorn.
I almost closed the browser tab with the show notes on it. That would have been there.
Yeah, don't do that.
In which case, we're going to...
News and weather, everyone.
Well, it's not really weather, but do you want to take this first one, or shall I?
Let's see. Yes, give me just a moment. I'm opening this up.
Close the ad thing, the pop-up, whatever it is.
Now, we talked about deepfakes and how they're fascinating yet kind of scary on here. Well, how about if we just had AI generated text? That's kind of scary in itself, right? I mean, you know, it's hard to verify that somebody wrote something, said something, or, you know, in just regular text, as opposed to trying to watch some video where they look funny saying something. So when pundits and researchers tried to guess what sort of manipulation campaigns might threaten the 2018 and the 2020 elections, misleading AI-generated videos often topped the list.
Mm-hmm.
Though the tech was still emerging, its potential for abuse was so alarming that tech companies and academic labs prioritized working on them and funding the methods and detection. Social platforms developed special policies for posts containing synthetic and manipulated media, in hopes of striking the right balance between preserving free expression and deterring viral lies. Well, we know how that worked out. So by now, with about 3 months to go until November 3rd, a wave of deep faked moving images seems never to have broken. Instead, another form of AI-generated media is making headlines, one that's harder to detect and much yet more likely to become a pervasive force of the internet. That's deep fake text. I keep wanting to say deep face. I don't know why. Anyway, last month brought an introduction of the GPT-3, the next frontier of generative writing, an AI that can produce shockingly human sounding, if at times surreal, sentences, much like myself.
You can occasionally come up with shockingly surround.
Yeah, so I have a moment. As it outputs becomes even more difficult to distinguish from text produced by humans, one can imagine a future in which vast majorities of written content we see on the internet is produced by machines. If this were to happen, how would it change the way we react to the content that surrounds us? Anyway, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but they go into how some of the, you know, the social media aspects and all that good stuff. So if you're interested in that, go take a look. It is kind of shocking and easy, you know, it is kind of shocking, but it's easy to, you know, to fake something like that. I mean, we've had ghostwriters and stuff all, you know, for years, but this is AI where you just tell it what to talk about and it just does it.
Well, the other thing that I thought was interesting is they go into saying this isn't the first time technology has had this, you know, kind of fake thing going on. Just look at when Photoshop came out in the 90s. Suddenly you couldn't really trust the pictures, but you kind of learned to accept that they were based on reality, but doctored up. Well, now if you have, you know, the GPT-3 doing text, how are you going to, as a consumer of that, how are you going to know if it's real, if it was partly real, if it was based on reality, or if it was just completely made up?
Well,
don't know.
You know, as I was reading this, you know, one thing that came into mind, and I don't know how you would actually implement something like this, but, you know, to make something official, just like you would put a, you know, a wax seal or something on a envelope, you're going to have to digitally sign things that you say. Maybe, I don't know, somehow.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, where you got to, or, you know, if it didn't come from my website, it didn't come from me, kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know how that's going to work out, but digitally signing text may come to mind.
Going to get interesting soon, kids. All right. Turning back to space, because we like space stories. SpaceX said Starlink, its nascent satellite internet service, has already seen, quote, extraordinary demand from potential customers, with nearly 700,000 individuals across the United States indicating they are interested in the company's coming service. Due to the greater than expected interest, SpaceX filed a request with the Federal Communications Commission on Friday asking to increase the number of authorized user terminals to 5 million. Originally, it was 1 million. User terminals are the devices consumers would use to connect to the company's satellite internet network. The request comes out about a month and a half after SpaceX updated its Starlink website to allow potential customers to get updates on Starlink news and service availability in your area. Registering one's interest in Starlink meant simply submitting an email address and postal address with no fee required to receive updates. Starlink is the company's ambitious plan to build an interconnected network of about 12,000 small satellites to beam high-speed internet anywhere in the world. To date, SpaceX has launched more than 500 Starlink satellites. In addition to getting the satellites in orbit, SpaceX will need to build a vast system of ground stations and affordable user terminals if it's going to connect consumers directly to its network. So they are on their way. Demand is up. Would you sign up?
I signed up for the beta.
What's the rate?
I don't think they've published a rate yet.
What's the speed?
I'm curious. Huh?
What's the speed?
The speed they had. Okay, so to get some, there were some federal money that they had to qualify for. And to do that, they had to provide that they got this certain speed, made a speed threshold. And apparently it's fast enough to do video conferencing. That's what they said.
Okay.
It's not like satellite, you know, from DirecTV that used to have a long time ago. This is
just slightly better than dial up.
It's supposed to be much better. And it does, if I'm not mistaken, the data comes down from space and you talk to a land-based, like almost like a mobile towers.
Node almost. Yeah.
Yeah. So you, it's like a full circle kind of thing.
Okay.
So I was pleasantly surprised, you know, cause there's times I've gone to the mountains and I'm like, yeah, it'd be nice to have internet here. Well, what if you could just turn on the box and the dish goes, you know, dials it in. Actually, the thing about the dish, it's supposed to automatically dial in the satellites. You don't have to sit there and try and figure out where they're at. It's kind of neat.
Sure.
This is going to be a cool service, I think. I think it's going to...
Well, it'll almost be like GPS, where you really don't have any lack of coverage because you've got a net of satellites out there that gives you complete coverage.
Yeah, and they're going to encompass the whole Earth. I think at first their goal was to do North America, and then, of course, as time goes on, they launch more satellites that'll do the rest of the Earth.
Wasn't Facebook working on something similar? Those were hot air balloon versions.
Google was doing the Loon project. I'm not sure what happened with that, but they were launching the balloons that would automatically adjust their elevation so they would get in the airstream, in the right airstream, and kind of stay in the one area. But they were providing access to very remote places. This would supplant that.
I don't know how you would get something up in the air and stay in one place.
Well, what happens is it would add more air, it would rise up,
right,
and it would move because of the airstream.
And then a hurricane comes through your area and takes them all out.
I think you're above all that stuff. It was that high up.
Yeah. Do you know how high hurricanes go?
I don't know. I haven't been in one. Well, I've been in one, but not.
They're like supercells, buddy. They're up in the 30,000, 40,000 foot area. And if you try sending a balloon up there, it's just going to get taken away by the jet stream or high altitude.
Yeah, we had to read how they were doing that. But yeah. I think we even talked about it a long time ago, but they wouldn't have tried it if they didn't think they could do it. You know, so it had to do with something about the way it would travel in the airstream. So it would come back around and
we should do some research on that. Or we can go listen to How Stuff Works Network.
Yeah. Yeah, just what we need. More Jonathan Strickland.
I was funny because I was listening to one of their podcasts and they, I forgot if it was Ridiculous History or what's the other one? I can't remember, but they were ripping on Jonathan. Said,
oh, really?
Yeah. It's like, sorry, ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan Strickland was in the studio just before us recording, you know, his Tech Stuff podcast. And now the place smells of bowling shirts and bald head wax.
Wow.
And if you know Jonathan, you could just picture that exactly. So I thought that was pretty funny. Okay. Next story is also about space. Your turn.
Yes. Actually, it's about space and it's very timely because the NASA Perseverance rover just took off this last week heading towards Mars. Which is kind of neat. We talked about it before. It's the project where they're going to lower it down with a helicopter and start roving around. Anyway, so this article right here is a Q&A with a spacesuit designer. And why are we talking about a spacesuit and the rover? Well, the reason they're doing that is they're sending some of the material to Mars so they can test it out in the atmosphere there on Mars and some of the environment so they can see what works and what doesn't, you know, when it comes to the suits. So NASA is preparing to send the first woman and next man to the moon, part of a larger strategy to send the first astronauts to the surface of Mars. But before they get there, they'll be faced with a critical question. What should they wear? Let's start with the underwear. Okay. I'm sorry. What should they wear on Mars? You know, on Mars, you know, there's a thin atmosphere and allows for more radiation from the sun and cosmic rays to reach the ground. So Amy Ross is looking for answers. An advanced spacesuit designer at NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston, she is developing new suits for the moon and Mars. So Ross is eagerly awaiting this summer's launch of the Perseverance Mars rover, which I noted that it's already taken off, which will carry the first samples of spacesuit material ever sent to the Red Planet.
Okay, so they're not sending the whole suit. They're just sending the material.
Yes, and if you look down, and I'm not going to read her whole Q&A, but you can go there. They're asking questions like, how is this going to hold up to the dirt on Mars? Is that an issue? And, of course, like you said, the radiation or, like those kind of things. Because, in all fairness, we have a good idea, but probably not definitive on how these things are going to work.
Interestingly enough, you mentioned the dirt on Mars as opposed to the regolith, which is the dirt on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Since the moon has no atmosphere and has no wind, it has no erosion. So every one of those little specks of dust is just as sharp as the day it was put on the moon. It was,
wheeled into existence.
Yeah. If a meteor hit the moon, blows out this crater, all those shards are as sharp as glass, and you don't want to inhale that stuff. It'd be bad news for your lungs. But they discovered this, of course, when they looked under a microscope, or they got back to Earth and looked at the spacesuits. That stuff was nasty.
Hey, I was just thinking on Mark Watney didn't go through a decontamination like he should have. When he went outside on the Mars surface and walked into the, some erosion there. They got wind and stuff.
Right, exactly. That was my point. Is the wind would take the rough edges off of a lot of that soil in on Mars. So it would be more. I want to say more like beach sand, but it wouldn't be as. Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So
I know this sounds stupid. Remember, was it Armageddon when they went to destroy that? The comet that was coming, or the asteroid that was coming to Earth?
That was the basic plot. I'm not going to say I watched that movie. I will neither confirm nor deny that.
Well, I just remember when I watched it, if I'm not mistaken, it's been a long time since I've seen it. When they were going to land, they were having to deal with very sharp protrusions and rocks and stuff because, like you said, there was nothing to do. I remember that was really the first time I thought about that and went, oh, yeah, I guess not. That would be a problem. So
the closest thing we have to that on Earth is when a volcano blows and it blows volcanic ash into the atmosphere. Same stuff. Very sharp edges. You don't want to inhale that stuff, which is why when it starts falling down, you must put a mask on, because if it gets in your lungs, it will rip them to shreds and you will die.
Oh, don't start with the mask thing.
Why? Do you have a volcano?
Maybe you haven't seen my backyard yet.
All right, let's take a real quick short break and we'll come back with
you that. You might, because it's so hot, right?
could be. No. All right, real short break. We'll be right back. Hang on.
Hi, this is Dean Hagel from The X-Files, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
I want to believe.
Greetings, programs.
And applications.
I'm Ben.
And I am Keith, and we are
the Two Gay Geeks.
We are the nerds behind TG Geeks Webcast,
where we talk about sci-fi,
comics,
film,
horror,
genre.
You name it, we talk about it.
We release an episode every Monday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern.
You can find us on iTunes, Blueberry, Spreaker, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
Also, look us up on YouTube. And of course,
we can be found at tggeeks.com, where you can find not only our webcast,
but articles about other geeky goodness.
So come along for the wildest ride in the potosphere.
Did you just say potosphere?
Go give our friends Ben and Keith a listen over at tggeeks.com. They have a new episode every week. Very prolific, very focused on independent content creators, films, books, you name it. Good stuff. Give them a listen. The Hacks and Strange Stories. I think it's this one. Yeah, that one. What is Craig saying? I didn't hear what Craig is saying. Craig, you're muted for whatever reason. Did you mute on your end?
Oh, I don't know how that clapped. I didn't do that on purpose.
Craig pulled a Zoom.
I don't know why I was muted. I didn't touch it. I was just saying, I know whenever they post a new episode, because I get like seven notifications on Facebook.
Yeah, one from Ben, one from Keith. You've been mentioned in it. One from Teach Geeks Webcast. Yeah, Monday mornings are, you can always tell when they played our promo. Thank you very much.
I love it.
So, a little cross-promotion.
I love it. Anyway. I think it's funny. Yes. On Monday mornings, it's like, fun. Hey.
Okay, this is one that I'm going to take because I have a friend who's made something similar to this. This is a robotic liquor, a bartender. We call ours LiquorBot. And I did send a link off to my coworker, Jason, who made a LiquorBot. So Donald...
He needs to step up his game. This one looks pretty good.
Well, he's just got a case on it. It's beautiful, and it's got Orson Welles drinking on it. So it's like, okay, whatever. And he's used different pumps. So let me get into this. Donald Bell's robotic bartender... Entry into the 2020 Cocktail Robotics Grand Challenge is one of those things that sounds easy until you start getting into the details. I can verify this, as I can attest to Jason's creations and the stories and generations he's gone through. After all, how hard is it to dispense some liquids into a glass? Harder than you might think. Sure, there are pumps, and Donald chose to use peristaltic pumps, which are the ones you kind of see circulating, if you look at a kidney machine and it's kind of got the pump right. That sort of squeezes the hose as it goes through, as opposed mm-hmm. to just going brrr, like a pool pump that just runs around and pumps stuff out. Okay. But there's also two Raspberry Pis. Interesting. Jason only has one. An ESP8622. I don't know where that came in or why. I'd like to see his designs and schematics and whatnot. And at least one more microcontroller lurking underneath, probably an Arduino or something similar to that. You can see the video about the device below. I do like his like dance club lighting that shows up just around. So his pumps go into a ring kind of configuration, and then around the ring as the drink is dispensing, he has like an LED array, a circular LED array that lights up. And I have one of those circular LED arrays. They're kind of fun to play with. Okay.
Yeah, that is. So it's got a little disco effect when you're getting your drink.
It does. It's pretty sweet. You're right. From the industrial design standpoint, this one's a beautiful thing. Even if you don't want a refreshing libation, you'll probably like the VK01's Blade Runner Cyberpunk styling. What we really enjoyed about the post was that it took you through the concept sketches, some of the design trades, and even a cardboard prototype. There are some interesting thoughts about the psychology of a robot bartender, too. Apparently, people don't find it satisfying to push a button and have a drink silently pour out into a hospital coffee machine, or like a hospital coffee machine. There's also an RFID card that Donald had ambitious plans for, but for now, it just detects that a user scanned a card. The software is something called Hello Drink Bot, so the custom software doesn't have to do the part. Now, I can tell you from the way that Jason, my coworker, did his, is he purchased and downloaded a drink recipe catalog of 10,000 different drinks.
Oh, yeah. There's no shortage of those catalogs online, but yeah, and you say he purchased it?
And he purposely built it for integrating with ServiceNow. So the idea mm-hmm. is you walk up to a tablet or something else and say, the machine already knows which eight ingredients you have. You say, I've got cranberry juice, and I've got tequila, and I've got vodka, and I've got orange juice. And it says, oh, based on those ingredients, let me look up in the catalog what I can make, and then displays those to you on a web page. And you go, I want a tequila sunrise. And it goes, yeah, I got the ingredients for that. And it tracks your order, so it also tracks how much has been dispensed, and then tells you, hey, it's time to refill the orange juice. So
it's time to pay your tab.
It's a big hit at trade shows, but we can only open it up after 5 p.m. So yeah. We did miss LiquorBot this year because we didn't have a conference. Steve from Sweden will attest to this, our loyal listener and customer who also interacts with us on other various videos and whatnot. So found it interesting.
Here's the tip to Jason. This is something for Jason.
Yeah.
What he needs to do is he needs to up his game and make something, make a new version where it has a liquor head and then it moves the thing over and gets you the mixers. So that way he can have different, a whole array of drinks you can make other than maybe a narrow set.
You can make a lot of stuff out of eight ingredients.
I know, but I'm just saying, if you add mixers, you can start getting into margaritas and stuff like that.
You can put those in. I mean, he's got eight pumps, so you can only hook up eight things. That's the limitation.
You need 16, man. Come on. You need more.
Do you know how much those pumps cost?
No. I'm not concerned. I'm an idea man. I don't care about the
money. We do have other plans, like a robotic arm to hold and dispense the cup. I noticed this one had more of a, almost like a mousetrap treadle. You put the cup on and it detected it as a switch. So the pallet went down a little bit and went, oh, there's a cup. Now it's time to dispense. Because right now you could walk up to Jason's and say, I want one of these. And if there's no cup there, it will dispense anyway. You end
you
up with
put your mouth under there
right,
real quick.
The guy's under the fill me up.
You know, my thought of when I watched the video, I saw the lights yes. You were talking about. Now, that was cool, but I'd want to do something where it said loading, you know, as it was making the drink, you know, some kind of loading bar. I don't know, something like that to differentiate myself. Anyway,
instead of watching Orson Welles talk about some poetic thing. Okay.
Waxing poetically about his liquor.
It will serve no wine before it's time.
Yeah.
From the Ernest and Julio Gallo.
Anyway,
actually,
let's go.
Wait a minute. Yes.
He did wine commercials before.
I think Jason needs to rename it. Call it Replicator.
Why would Replicator induce a thought about a liquor bot? What's the connection?
Well, you know, and when you didn't see Picard on screen, you don't know if he ordered, you know, bourbon on the rocks, you know, instead of, hot, you know, the Earl Grey.
I think it's time to move on to the next story. You're the only one making
move
the connection
on.
Here.
I'm stretching. Yeah. Just move on.
That was okay.
Go.
I did the last story. You get the prosthetic hand story.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
This is pretty
now,
cool.
I did see a video of this other day. This is really cool. So a mechanical engineer, Ian Davis, built an extraordinary mechanical prosthetic hand for himself after losing four fingers in a shop accident 2 years ago.
Ouch.
He started working on the build when he was denied a prosthetic hand by his healthcare provider because they said his fingers weren't medically necessary. Okay, let that sink in for a second. If that wasn't bad enough, he also has cancer. No, that's not a joke.
Dang.
So this man perfectly exemplifies America, the ingenuity and do-it-yourself attitude, along with the absolute failure of our institutions and healthcare system. Now, I don't mean to sound like I'm reading the article verbatim. I sound like a ableist, but I couldn't even imagine building this thing with two hands, let alone one. So anyway, if you watch the video, you can see he made the fingers work perfectly. So he just, I guess, bends the palm of his hand.
Yes. If he bends his wrist backwards a little bit, that instructs mm-hmm. the servos to open up the fingers. He's got his thumb, but he doesn't have four fingers. Imagine his hand cut off right behind the four knuckles. That's what he's got left. So this attaches on and to the bottom of the wrist. And then when he tips his wrist back, the servos open up the fingers from a clenched fist to opened up. And if he rolls his wrist a little bit laterally, it will splay mm-hmm. the fingers. That was what he recently did. And he wants to get it to the point where he can do individual fingers. So he could do, you know, the pincer movement with just index and thumb, or, you know, maybe just hold up his pinky and his ring finger at the same time for whatever gesture that is.
You know what? It's totally mechanical. I don't think there's any electricity. It's not servos in there.
It does have a battery.
Okay.
Yeah. It does have a battery in there. He's also going to hook up a little Arduino with a display in there. He talked about that in the second video. He says, I haven't done an update
that
in
part
a while.
I saw. Yeah. No, but I mean the initial one, I don't think it had any, it didn't have anything electrical in there. It was all mechanical.
My thought is, you know, as useful as the hand is, could you improve that design at all? You know, I'm half joking here, but think about, Kentucky Fried Movie. Okay. When they were doing a mix of,
it always comes back to that for
they
you
were
done
doing a riff on a Bruce Lee movie, but the guy mm-hmm. had different attachments for his hand. Actually, the Bruce Lee movie did too, where he had one that was knives and one that was, well, on the Kentucky Fried Movie one, he would plug in and one was a drill.
I mean, right.
If you could take your tool chest with you, you take off the finger attachment and you put on, the Dremel and you start Dremeling with your hand. So do you need four fingers or do you really need three fingers and maybe a screwdriver? I don't know. Or your keys for your car or something. It makes me wonder what other extensions you could do besides the fingers. Yes. I mean, having a useful hand is very helpful when you want to grab a water bottle and have a drink or, pick up a cup or stir.
Or would it be useful to have longer fingers or shorter? I don't know.
You ever try buttoning your shirt with one hand?
Yeah.
Or tying your shoes with one hand?
I've tried.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. Very hard.
So
when I saw this, I was amazed, especially when he started splaying his fingers and went, whoa, that could be a game changer. If you're trying to pick up something bigger, like a ball,
it didn't say, what stages cancer is, if it's terminal or whatnot. So we wish him all the best. I hope he has, he survives the cancer and can start a business with this because the design looks impressive and it doesn't, if he built it, it can't. I don't want to say this with any certainty, but it didn't look like it was that expensive. And he could possibly start another business for prosthetics like this because the mechanics, they looked complex, but the implementation was fairly simple because it didn't work like a normal prosthetic arm or hand or something that took electrical impulses. It was, you're right, sort of a mechanical nature, tip your wrist back, roll your wrist, and you could do a lot of different moves. So
yeah, he was even holding two fingers down, opening just two on their own.
It was,
if you go to his Instagram, which I actually just did, you can see, there's a little video of him. He's squeezing ketchup out with his mechanical hand on some, on Chick-fil-A fries. It blows me away. Hey, this is a great thing.
We salute you, Mr. Ian Davis. All right, shout out to the chat room. We got to wrap this up. We're almost at the end of the show. Wow, it's been a long time. We had a lot of feedback at the beginning. So shout out to the chat room. I've got Christina Norris, Elton Chapman, John Miller Jr. We've got a few people in here. Did I miss anybody? Mike Robeson.
Sky Tyler.
Eric Miller, another coworker, customer, service now, Scott Tyler. Yeah, we got a number of people here who join us at 9:30 Eastern Time, 6:30 Pacific. On Facebook, go look for Technorama Podcast and follow the page. You'll get notified when we come up with a new show there, or you can subscribe to our YouTube, that kind of thing too.
By the way,
yes,
Elton Chapman says t-shirts just slip on. You don't have to button them.
That's why I wear one for this show. It's easier.
That's pretty much my business attire throughout the week is it's a t-shirt.
Tough to do the bow tie with one hand. So hope to see you there. Let's jump ahead to the patrons, which I believe is that colored button.
Yeah.
So we have an army of followers that appreciate the show so much that they're willing to give up their hard-earned cash as little as a dollar per episode to keep this show running. And I'll tell you, I greatly appreciate it because the annual bill just came in for Wirecast support. And we can continue to support the app another year, get the upgrades we need so that we can bring you the video on Facebook and YouTube. Thank you. Thank you very much. That is most appreciated. And you get to see our smiling faces every time we do this.
Grimace there. But, okay.
Grimace is the big purple dude at McDonald's. They not only get a shout out on the show, they get extra content delivered to them. On Mondays, Craig and I are going to have an informal discussion right after this. So let's get through the names. Thank you, Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown. I miss Brian.
Yeah.
He was living in our guest house a year ago. Doesn't that seem like ages ago already with the whole virus thing and whatnot?
I like how you go, maybe we don't miss him that much.
Chris MC, Dandy Mancoyer, Danny Mortensen, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, thank you very much. We are almost halfway done. Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorga Schrawin, Christina, Kyle Nishioka, Leon, thank you, Mark Kilfoyle, Thank you, Mike Wills, Night Gig Studios, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Wetchy, Steve Therian, Spiffy, Steve Cody, and last but not least, Steve London from Sweden. Thank you, everybody, who has donated.
In there.
Your contributions keep this show running. Literally, you do. Every month, we get a bill from our hosting provider. It's paid through your kind donations, and we really, really do appreciate that. Every year, we got the Wirecast thing. In a couple of years, I think we got two more left, we're going to have to do the domain registration again. So it's it's a constant thing, and we really do enjoy doing this for the fun of it, for keeping our skills sharp, for hanging out and talking crap with each other. You can do the same if you wish. Donna's already got lower thirds on there. Go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast and sign up to become a Technorama patron. We've got 28 people in our four-column table. That is a perfect seven rows. And one thing we like to do is mess with Craig's OCD.
My wife would be like, you don't have OCD.
But we like to say does, just for this part of the show.
Yeah, just for this part. Yeah, it drives me nuts.
We want one, two, or three more people. Five would be fun, too, just to give us an odd number in the columns, because he doesn't like the empty cells. It's a bit like jail. No, that didn't work.
Right.
I used up the whole 3.5 minutes on this. Wow. That was one of the longest ones we've had yet. And I said I was going to try and keep that short. Shame on me. Well, I almost played Clinton's Shame on Me. One more story from the media corner, and then we will take us out of here. So thanks. Yep. Thanks for hanging out with us. This man has probably been in more movies and TV shows than any actor in history. We are talking about none other than James Wong, with over 500 credits to his name. I have not looked on his IMDb page. I'm almost afraid to, just to count how many things I've seen him in. But there's probably more that I haven't.
You know him from all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah. He does even some of the, he's done voiceovers or voice acting in a number of things. He was Mr. Ping in Kung Fu Panda. He was, he's just been all over the place. He was.
He was in Wayne's World 2.
He's in Wayne's World 2. He was in Blade Runner. He's been acting since the early 60s, and he's also been very instrumental in supporting Asian American actors, because back in the 60s, there were no lead actors, Asian American lead actors, and he's gotten more of the recognition. So kudos to him. I think he's, what, like 94 right now or something ridiculous? He's been acting for 66 years. So
yeah,
kudos to you, James Wong. I'm sorry we haven't met yet, and I hope we do before we're both done with this mortal coil.
No kidding.
If we don't get a chance to meet in person, well, we salute you regardless. Oh, he was in Mulan. That's right. He was also the guy making the rules in Mulan. That's what I was trying to think
of. He's also in Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes. I really want to look at that. Oh, 600 credits and counting. That's
yeah.
I lost track. He must have done another 100 while we were talking.
yeah he's racking them up as we go.
Quick, go look at his list before it gets to 700. All right, our question of the week we want to leave you with this week is, what should be humanity's goal? Wow, that's a pretty deep question, Craig. Where'd you come up with that one?
Hey, we're deep here.
What should be our goal? Yeah. I got a couple of them that spring to mind, but they're based on recent events. So let's see what our wonderful listeners think. In the meantime, we give you a week to think about that and a week to think about becoming a Patreon member. We're going to play the music and we are going to get out of here. Thank you for joining us again. If you want to get in touch with us, you can either answer those questions when they show up on social media, or you can find us, send us an email, voicemail. Voicemail is 707-530-2428. Email technorama@chuckchat.com.
Smoke signals, whatever.
Smoke signals.
Yeah.
In semaphore, because, you know, the telegraph is wholly unnecessary. Got to have the callback in the show. Thank you very much for joining, Craig. Thanks for all your help with putting together the stories and a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, keeping the website running. Craig's the man. Donna does our video engineering, making sure that the cameras are right, the subtitles, the lower thirds of everything.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Sounds like Donna and I are doing the most work around here. What do you do?
Collect the paycheck. Give him a binary high five, Craig.
Right.
What's the 101?
Oh, 101. I thought you were still talking.
Well-oiled machine.